From the KTO Newsroom, I'm Jamie Deep. Thanks for tuning in. The Juneau Assembly doesn't plan to take a stance on whether it's in favor of the state's proposed Cascade Point ferry terminal north of Juneau. That's despite Haines and Skagway openly opposing the project. The new ferry terminal would be located beyond where the road ends in Juneau on land owned by Goldbelt Incorporated, a local Alaska Native corporation. The project is slated to cost tens of millions of dollars. Juneau already has a ferry terminal in Auk Bay. The new terminal would be about 30 miles north of the Auk Bay terminal. The state has been pushing for the new terminal for several years, saying it would benefit travelers by reducing operating costs and travel time between Juneau, Haines, and Skagway. But in an interview, Juneau Mayor Beth Weldon says that the assembly has other priorities to focus on right now.
I don't think we ever took a stance on it because we just had other more pressing issues, like the flood was. We've been dealing with that for 3 years now. So and now we're dealing with budget cuts and everything else. So I don't see it coming back on our plate for quite some time.
The State Department of Transportation has already signed a $28 million contract for the project's first phase in July, and construction could begin in next summer. An economic analysis released last month by the department weighed the financial merits. Overall, it portrayed it as having more pros than cons. That's despite its high price tag and criticism from regional officials and members of the Alaska Marine Highway Oversight Board. The analysis concluded the project would allow for flexible travel in the region and would play a key role in bringing a proposed new gold mine in Juneau to fruition. Canadian mining company Grand Portage wants to develop an off-site ore terminal at the new ferry dock in partnership with Goldbelt. The state began soliciting public comment on the first phase of the project last month. The comment period runs through November 28th. Five firefighter apprentices in Juneau received their pins on Saturday. That means they formally joined the force. The five new recruits are officially EMTs and are welcomed by an understaffed department. Capital City Fire Rescue Chief Rich Etheridge led the ceremony at the Douglas Public Library next door to the fire station.
This is the future of the fire service. These are the folks that are going to replace the ones that have been here for a while.
This program is the first of its kind in Juneau. Etheridge says the 10-month training has two necessary credentials built into it so the department can recruit people before they are certified.
We decided that we'll bring them on, we'll give them all that training. So we look for people with the interpersonal skills and natural aptitude and some leadership and teamwork. And then we start building the rescue skills from there.
Saturday's ceremony marks the apprentices finishing their EMT certifications. That allows them to respond to emergencies as EMTs, offering more advanced medical care instead of just observing those parts of the job. Sarah Cannell is one of the newly certified apprentices, and she says her time in the program has taught her that she is resilient.
And now that I have that certification and people are putting a little bit more trust in me, I'm able to do more things and kind of show what I know. And it's really fun and exciting to, like, put my skills to the test.
She says she's excited to have the certification under her belt so she can be of more service to the department. The apprentices will complete their Firefighter 1 certifications and graduate from the program in May. And renters living in Juneau's Telephone Hill neighborhood had until Saturday to vacate their homes before the city evicted them. That clears the way for the city's plan to demolish the houses in December and redevelop the area to build newer, denser housing there in response to the city's housing crunch. The evictions come after outcry by local advocates who ask the city to halt them until it produces a clearer redevelopment plan. Right now, a developer has not signed on to the project. More than a dozen people testified at a Juneau Assembly meeting last week in hopes of persuading members to reverse course and save the historic downtown neighborhood. However, no action was taken on the topic. The Juneau Assembly is slated to discuss the project and next steps for the redevelopment at a committee meeting today at 6 p.m. The discussion will include the timeline for demolition and finding a developer and will address several other questions about the project brought forth by advocates. View Drive is the street hardest hit by Juneau's annual glacial outburst flood and remains unprotected by the city's temporary levee. The Juneau Assembly is hoping to avoid paying for a portion of the cost for a federal program that would offer buyouts to those residents. KTOL's Alex Solomon has more.
A federal buyout for View Drive would pay residents to leave, demolish their homes, and transform the land into a park. But first, the city has to decide whether to sponsor it. At this point, it's not clear if the Assembly will vote to do so. Mayor Beth Weldon was cautious at Thursday's special assembly meeting, where experts presented the city's options.
I don't think anybody's ready to commit to anything tonight, but we'll follow up with any questions that we have for you.
Brett Nelson is Alaska's conservation engineer at the Natural Resources Conservation Service, or NRCS. The federal agency oversees a recovery buyout program. At the meeting, he explained that the city and borough of Juneau would be responsible for 25% of the cost. That means the city would be on the hook for up to around $6 million. The assembly voted unanimously to request a waiver. Nelson said it's worth making the request, but he's not sure it's realistic that NRCS headquarters would approve it.
I'll say this, it is not very often used.
If the cost is not waived, the city could seek funding from other sources besides Juneau taxpayers, such as nonprofits. But there is one restriction on the city's portion.
The 25% cannot be from another federal source unless that other federal source comes with congressional language specifically indicating that it can be used as a match for federal dollars.
Nelson says it would take around a year to complete the process, but the agency would prefer to offer the buyout option to residents before the next flood, expected next summer.
This is an emergency program, and we'd like to move as expeditiously as possible.
If the city does take on the project, NRCS will appraise the 18 homes on View Drive, and then residents will choose whether to take the deal or stay. Engineers say that while a couple of properties on View Drive might benefit from a barrier, the whole street can't be protected by the HESCO barriers that make up the temporary levee protecting most other valley neighborhoods. Mike Records is a hydraulic engineer at the U.S. Army Corps. He compared the hazard of putting HESCO barriers on View Drive to the danger of a mariner taking a dinghy across Lynn Canal during a storm.
View Drive basically sits on a moraine from the retreat of the Mendenhall Glacier, so that moraine is extremely porous.
He says that means the water would seep from under a temporary levee and form a pool. That's what happened to a property at the end of the street, where residents decided to erect their own berm.
We were building a reservoir, potential reservoir, with homes in the middle and no way out.
Records says he recognizes it's unfair not to protect View Drive residents who faced flooding over and over, and that they're in a, quote, horrible situation. But from an engineering perspective, he says the only way to protect households that decide to stay is to implement a long-term flood solution. Nelson says that the parcels that get bought out would be restricted from development forever. So households that participate in the program couldn't return, even after a long-term solution is built. He says NRCS has already determined View Drive is eligible for a buyout, and federal funding would likely be available soon after the government shutdown ends if the city decides to sponsor it. In Juneau, I'm Alex Solomon.
People who rely on food assistance from SNAP, the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, could have their electronic benefits card refilled as soon as this week. That's after Governor Mike Dunleavy issued a state disaster declaration in an effort to free up state funds to make up for federal money delayed by the Trump administration amid the government shutdown. The roughly 66,000 Alaskans who participate in the federally funded state-run SNAP program did not have their cards refilled on Saturday as scheduled. Until this weekend, the Trump administration said that funding for the program would run out on November 1st. State House Speaker Bryce Edgman, an independent from Dillingham, says it's clear the state needed to act to help Alaskans struggling to put food on the table.
Compelling stories all around the state of single families and elderly people and others not being able to get food because their cards had run out, were already beginning to come to light. So we knew we had to act quickly, and I'm really pleased working with the governor and Senate President Stevens that we were able to put our heads together and make this happen.
On Friday, two federal judges ordered the administration to tap a contingency fund to at least partially fund benefits. But the Trump administration says it'll take time for that money to be distributed, and the administration says it only has enough money to fund half of SNAP recipients' typical benefits. Dunleavy's disaster declaration allows the state to refill benefit cards with state funds quickly and offer money to food banks around the state. That says they're already stressed by the response to ex-Typhoon Halong and the federal government shutdown. Dunleavy previously said it would likely take weeks for any state money to flow up to beneficiaries. But on Sunday, Edgman says the contractor that handles SNAP cards told the state that recipients' debit cards could be reloaded much sooner. As of Monday afternoon, a Department of Health spokesperson estimated cards could be refilled by Friday. Edgman says the disaster declaration eliminates the need for a special legislative session to address the issue. Lawmakers and the governor have floated a special session as a possible way to respond. And when earthquakes strike, seismic stations in Alaska pick up signals and rapidly transmit them to a center that alerts at-risk communities. Avery Alpha reports for the Alaska Desk that the canceled contract could mean less timely and accurate tsunami warnings in Alaska and beyond.
The Alaska Earthquake Center, for decades, has collected data from seismology stations across the state and directly fed the information to NOAA's National Tsunami Centers in Palmer and Hawaii. If the data indicates an earthquake could lead to a tsunami, the Tsunami Center sends out a warning message in minutes. But that's about to change, says Mike West, the state seismologist with the Alaska Earthquake Center. In late September, NOAA advised the center that it will no longer be funding that work.
We are anticipating direct data feeds to stop in mid-November.
The news comes amid the Trump administration's effort to dramatically slash federal spending, including by making major cuts to key weather and climate programs within NOAA. The tsunami program cuts are a big deal, West says, given that NOAA's National Weather Service has historically been a primary supporter of seismic data collection in Alaska. But the federal agency doesn't actually collect much of that data itself. The Earthquake Center does. So, without the contract,
they lose data from dozens and dozens of sites all around the state, and specifically, or maybe more urgently, a handful of sites out in the Aleutians and the Bering that have been there for decades, specifically for this purpose.
That loss could have a range of effects, including less precise information. It could also mean less timely information, a concerning outcome given that earthquakes can generate tsunamis in some parts of coastal Alaska in less than 10 minutes. The potential fallout isn't isolated to the state. Tsunamis that originate here can become Pacific-wide events. West says the funding issues started before the government shutdown. He reached out to the agency in late September after funding did not arrive ahead of the contract's October 1 start date. A NOAA official later confirmed via email that the agency did not have the budget to support the contract. West says the Earthquake Center is grappling with the situation, but that its NOAA data feeds and tsunami-specific work will wind down soon.
We are not going to continue operating those stations in the Aleutians that are, you know, entirely NOAA support. We're not going to just, like, keep doing it or something.
NOAA did not respond to a request for comment.
This is KTOO.